Good afternoon. This is Brian Reynolds, County Librarian for San Luis Obispo County, and we're here for Issues and Ideas. Today's topic is bullying, bullying in all its facets. And our guests are Dan Hartzell from the YMCA and Jen Rhodes from Friday Night Live, Drug and Alcohol Services. Welcome.
Thank you.
Dan and Jen, and either one of you, would, if you'd like to start off, can we start with sort of a historical context about bullying, where it comes from in the world, and maybe a little bit about what the topic of bullying is about nationally or even locally, some history.
You know, I think bullying is always been an issue. It's something that anytime there's differences, there's changes, it's, you know, something's new. People don't always know how to handle it right away. And sometimes out of ignorance or just not knowing something, that we tend to judge right off the bat. And we don't always know how to handle the situation, or we're not equipped at that point to know how to act. So sometimes I think that results in people changing those feelings to hate sometimes, and just not understanding and trying to find an avenue. And sometimes hate is just that quick, easy way to go, or I don't like this, or that's not cool, as opposed to trying to understand something and the work and effort that does take.
Jen, what do you think about that? Does that resonate with you?
It does. And I think that a lot of times bullying or bullying behaviors come from being uncomfortable in a situation, whether it's the bully being maybe uncomfortable with him or herself and feeling self-conscious, and so they're going to put that off on somebody else to make them feel worse than they do, so that they can make themselves feel more comfortable in a situation. Or like Dan said, it's just, you know, could be a matter of not understanding something, thinking it's weird, and wanting to not have that in their world. And so they'll put it down and behave in a bullying manner towards those people that do those things.
Maybe part of it is a little bit of fear. What we fear, we want to take action to reduce the fear, and maybe for some people it's makes them feel better to strike out or do something. I have heard that violence in general is sort of the lazy person's way of solving problems. It takes longer to talk about things or negotiate, whereas if you just make your fingers into a fist and smack somebody, I mean, whatever else it is, that's quick. What about the idea of institutional bullying? For example, I'm sure in the world and in history, there have been some groups or governments, whatever, that institutionalize bullying. It isn't random, but it's rather systematic or intentional. Do you have an opinion on that?
I think that in that sense, it would be about that group wanting to assert their own power and control, and wanting to really kind of create the environment or the culture that is particular to their beliefs and ideals. And so by doing so, they, you know, will institute different things or start saying things against what they don't like to eradicate it from their culture or their bubble.
Right, so it's sort of a planned thing sometimes. Do you have an opinion on that, Dan?
Yes, you know, and sometimes I think that it becomes unintentional, but it's, you know, these groups have an idea, or these institutions have an idea of what they're trying to achieve, and sometimes lose perspective of the people that they're hurting, or the people that may not fall into those categories. And it's a difficult thing. I think it's natural for humans to want to feel that power, and to have a power and control over their environments, and trying to harness that and push to find something that's what they want to create and what they want to do. And sometimes when you have people that don't necessarily agree with that, it can be difficult, and sometimes that's where hate can develop. So
it seems to me, and I guess I see this in my profession as a librarian, that wise people are often not so sure of themselves, because they know there's multiple options. And sometimes the less knowledge you have, the more sure you are of a particular answer or solution. And my own idea is that some groups who want to control others, they do it by fear, because when a person's afraid, they do things they wouldn't normally do, or they maybe do violent things or whatever. But I think fearful people are more easily controlled because they are off balance. They are uncertain. They are, you know, they have the rage or the passion going on. And so I do think personally it is sometimes intentional. It seems to me that bullying would work. I mean, I know that's a weird thing to say, but it would work better if the target was an easily identified target. So we know and hear a lot about kids being bullied, like on the school grounds or going to and from school. Besides kids, are there other groups that have been targeted in the past for bullying?
Well, yeah. I mean, historically, I mean, you could look at the Holocaust was basically a very extreme, violent sense of bullying. So races and sexual identity and
religion,
you know, even socioeconomic status, you know, could be bullied either really one way or the other, whether it's very poor people or sometimes I think very rich people can be bullied as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Dan, do you have an opinion on that one?
Yeah, you know, I think historically, too, with things like civil rights, there's been big movements to try and bring awareness to these situations. And the hard part is that technology moves so fast, society moves so fast that it does. It finds different ways of popping up in different environments in different ways. So we learn historically through what we've been through. And then we've also, you know, we push down in one area and sometimes it can pop up in another area.
For sure. Let's talk a little bit about, I do want to come back to the idea of computers and the cyberbullying, because I think that's a huge topic today in the news. But could we talk a little bit about what some anti-bullying efforts are in the county? For example, what is the YMCA doing? What is Friday Night Live up to? I know there's a program called No Place for Hate. How does that fit in?
Sure. Well, in Friday Night Live, we are primarily focused on drug and alcohol prevention. However, we know that we expand that prevention to mental wellness and campus climate and bullying issues because those are all things that affect our young people and can really kind of be some of the root causes of them choosing risky behaviors or escape behaviors like using drugs and alcohol. And so Friday Night Live's focus really is about making sure that we are creating safe environments for our young people, whether it's in the schools or in their communities, in their homes with their parents. So the past couple years, we've engaged our young people in the No Place for Hate project, where they basically put on a campaign on their school campus where they kind of look bullying in the face and say, "We don't want this here. We want to promote positive things. We want our young people to care about one another, take care of each other, and stand up for what's right."
Sounds good. Dan, what are you guys up to with the Y?
Yep, and that's kind of the biggest thing. We're also using the No Place for Hate, and collaborations are a huge part. The old saying, it takes a village to raise a child, that's how we feel. You know, we want that family environment. As Jen was saying, I think the best thing we can do and that we try really hard in the YMCA when we're doing our No Place for Hate campaign is to give the kids a voice. If we're trying to run this campaign and just the adults alone, the kids, they don't buy into it as much. So when you give these kids this voice and you have them create this community and you give them the opportunity to provide a safe place and to bring bullying awareness to them, and they are identifying the issues with bullying on their school and their campus, and then you're giving them the tools and the resources of how are we going to solve this. I think it's very empowering, and I think the kids also take to it more. A big part of the No Place for Hate is also that we have to form a committee to apply for to be a No Place for Hate school. We have to form a committee. So often out in our Cambria site, we have Friday Night Live, the YMCA, our principals and teachers that are all on that No Place for Hate committee. So it brings in those different community environments with the school day and provides, so it's a nice sound community environment that we're all tackling the same issue with the kids.
Who's in charge of those committees? In other words, is there a chair? Is there a treasury? Are there rules? Anything like that?
Well, there's, I guess for the kind of the global No Place for Hate project, it's coordinated by the Anti-Defamation League. And the main office is out of Santa Barbara, but here in San Luis Obispo County, we have a local board, I guess, and they kind of help promote it throughout the county and try and get different organizations to participate. And that's how we initially became involved, was because through the Asset Development Network, we learned about it and from the YMCA, and so we're like, oh, hey, that fits perfectly with Friday Night Live. So we kind of jumped on board. And so kind of programmatically, the board helps, not regulate, but gives the parameters for what the project should look like, and kind of keeps some accountability in that way. And then as far as the school sites committees go, those implementing the projects, it's kind of just a team atmosphere, and there's usually a leader, whether it's one of the students who really wants to take charge. We try and let that happen.
You know, we live in a big, diverse county, some cities, a lot of rural areas. I have two questions that are interrelated. Either one of you are welcome to answer. What is the geographic spread of this program? For example, is it available in every community or not? And if it isn't, then how do people get connected if they don't live in an area that's served by that? And where do the activities typically happen? Is it on a school campus? So geography and then location for the program itself is the question.
Well, I would say that it's countywide. I know between Friday Night Live sites and the YMCA sites, I think we're in every geographic region. We had No Place for Hate projects at Napomo all the way up to Shandon High School and Middle School, and then across to Cambria and Cayucas and everywhere in between. Most of the school-based projects had activities on campus, and then I know a lot of them also did some parent outreach activities, so whether it was an open house or a parent night or some other way to engage the parent community in that. And then through, kind of separate from No Place for Hate but still bullying focused, the Asset Development Network worked to create a performance called Hear Our Voices, and we had several community performances of that.
Like a play?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a play.
Cool. So it's more or less countywide, and not always, but most of the time the activities are centered sort of at a school campus. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
I would say it's typically at the school campus, and that's No Place for Hate and the Anti-Defamation League kind of build the framework particularly for schools, but it's definitely something that can be embraced, I feel, in other community aspects, and the ADL is a great resource for that. So if organizations were interested in finding a way to implement No Place for Hate as well, they're more than, you know, contacting the Anti-Defamation League and saying, how can we implement this, is always an option as well.
Remind me, as we get towards the close, I do want to ask for some contact numbers or some websites where people can get involved. Here's an impression I have about bullying and other antisocial behaviors, that it's not inborn in people. It's not a natural tendency, that it's learned behavior, which is a little bit scary, because if you pick up that kind of poison, you got to get it from somewhere. But it's also, to me, encouraging, because it means you can unlearn it. Probably kids learn to do this at the knees of their parents, or maybe on the school grounds, or maybe in religious groups. How do you get those other people involved who do have a role in helping mold kids besides just the kids? You mentioned parents. Are there any other active or specific activities you do to bring in the broader community?
Well, I think it starts with the parents. So we try and do a lot of parent outreach in that sense. And then also, I think that teachers are a great resource, and a lot of times I think teachers aren't necessarily given the tools and kind of the confidence, I guess, to stand up to bullying when they see it or when a young person comes to them. And I know we kind of mentioned it, but it's really difficult to define a clear picture of bullying, because it can happen in so many different ways. And sometimes it's, you know, not very overt, and so it's kind of like, what did they mean by that? And so I think that we've tried to do a lot of outreach to school staff as far as, here are some things that you can do, here are ways to recognize bullying, and then also just different things that they can implement on their campus to create a more bully-free environment. And then I think, too, just starting there and then hoping that that message will filter out into the community if the local stores and restaurants around those campuses start taking on that culture shift, too, and then we kind of build outward from there.
Have either one of you ever met somebody or been involved with some group who resists your efforts or who might consider bullying normal? I know there's a certain expectation, or at least historically, for men to be macho and not, feminine or whatever, and maybe the bullying, some of it comes from there. And it seems like culture is changing, where men are allowed to show their softer side or to cry and stuff. But have you run into people or groups that resist your efforts?
I don't think I've run into a group per se, but it's difficult too. You have families that have different ideals, and you're working with different kids, and each family has a different perspective on bullying and what's considered bullying, and that's kind of the difficulty we're talking about too. And Jen was saying is finding that nice square box that it all fits into, because some kids may take something offensively, and then another kid might just roll off their shoulder, and so it's hard to say. It's really, bullying is almost what effect has the victim had on this? What were they offended by? What was said? And depending on the severity of what's being said to the child and the targeted victim, so it's difficult. Some. I do have some kids that are more rowdy and that are more aggressive, and sometimes it may just be due to a climate, and not necessarily per se a group or a person telling them they need to do this way, but them finding a way that this actually gets me more attention, or the reinforcing value is so much higher with this, and it's instant as opposed to something that's that might take more time, and that reward may be farther delayed before I see it.
Yeah, it. I can see if the parents are a part of the picture, and I'm sure most of the time they are. There's nothing you can do to require the parents to attend a meeting or to participate. You just have to hope for the best, or maybe peer pressure would get some parents in. You know, I want to segue to the idea of cyberbullying, which we hear about more and more. One of my own theories is that computers are so pervasive in life, and they have so many effects, good and bad. But one of them for sure is that it makes things happen quicker, that people say and do things online that they might not say or do in real life. But by the time you've thought about it and pressed send or whatever, clicked, it's too late. You can't call back a cruel comment, or you can't explain a joke that was taken wrong. What role, in your view, do computers have or social media have with this phenomenon?
Well, I think two things. I think what you said, one, about how quickly it can happen. And I think what plays into that as well is that when if a person's going to maybe post a mean comment or something like that on, a Facebook, or send a mean text, I think sometimes it's a little bit easier to do it that way than to actually have to say it to the person's face and see their reaction. I think that a person who's going to use, a cell phone or a computer to bully somebody, they don't have to have that guilt of being like seeing the hurt on that person's face and saying, "Oh, that was really mean." They just do it and then it's done.
They're kind of at a distance.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I think that plays into it is I think that things like, particularly Facebook and other social media sites, I think that they encourage comparison between people. And I think that a lot of times, maybe even, this kind of comes into the unintentional part of bullying, but maybe a young person goes on there and they're like, "Oh, well, I haven't done as many fun things as these other people, or they get to go to these places, or they have more friends than I do. And it almost starts working on their self-esteem, and they start to feel badly about themselves. And then maybe somebody makes a negative comment that normally in real life it would have been like, oh, whatever. But they kind of have already built up some sensitivity, and then the comment happens, and it just kind of all piles on, and it makes it worse.
Makes it worse. I'd like to hold on to this thread of the whole cyber idea, but I do want to remind our listening audience that this is Issues and Ideas. I'm Brian Reynolds, your host, and we're joined today by Dan Hartzell of the YMCA and Jen Rhodes from the Friday Night Live program. Dan, do you have some opinions about the computer thing? For example, I know that on computers, a lot of times all you see is the text, and thus the message you get is limited. You can't necessarily see the person's facial expression or body language. I know that's a way that jokes get misinterpreted, because when you tell a joke and face-to-face, you can soften it or tell somebody that it's meant to be humorous by raising your eyebrows or smiling. How do you think the social media fits into this?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. Texting and even the online presence of text, it doesn't show emotion. It doesn't show the intonation, and especially nowadays, our generation of sarcasm. So sometimes it's difficulty seeing that that's actually a sarcastic comment. And, you know, I think it's funny because you have this development of emoticons, and these icons are developed to show the emotion. And I think it's almost kind of like a brand new language that's developing as well. But in that, it's also creating a lot of stuff. I think the difficulty with social media is it's a double-edged sword. I've seen it do some amazing great things for bullying campaigns, and then I've seen it be, you know, a spur and a reinforcer of bullying. It's difficult. Kids are impulsive, and they want to put something out, and their emotions, you know, they wear them on their shoulders, so it goes straight to that Facebook page, and then you have 2,000, 3,000 people that have commented on it and kind of built on it. And so, I mean, that's such a large audience, and if it's a large audience giving you and reinforcing your bad message, then it's difficult. It makes you want to do it again the next time, and kind of keep going with it.
Because you got the attention.
Yeah, because you got the attention for it. The reinforcing value was just so high, and that's kind of the difficulty. And the blessing of internet, it opens you up to a huge audience and a global audience. I've seen campaigns where on YouTube, and I wish I could remember the name of it, but where a girl actually had gotten bullied, and then she had done a YouTube video where she just, her note cards kind of kept flipping and explained how bullying affected her and hurt her, and it was very, you know, it was very gripping. So things like that are kind of the battle side for the good and focusing on the anti-bullying. So.
Well, the YouTube would allow people to show themselves, you know, the music or their face or whatever else. So that's a really interesting thing. I've read something about one of the elements of the internet is it tends to aggregate people into groups, because ultimately a lot of the focus is selling things, and so you want people who like certain things or want to buy certain things. And it seems to me that kind of homogeneity could be, let's say, building of camaraderie, but it also could build a club that a child, maybe a weaker child, would feel they weren't a part of. And so I know that can happen. What about working with bullies themselves? Are there any programs for them to help them heal or learn to do different behaviors?
Well, I know our Friday Night Live programs don't particularly target bullies. We don't go up to a group of kids and say, well, you all have bullied those kids over there, so we're going to bring you in and we're going to talk to you. We don't think that would be super effective. So what we try to do is really more on a global level, utilizing kind of the idea of positive peer pressure, and that if everybody can get together and do the right thing and not give that positive reinforcement to the bully, then it'll all be better for everybody.
Do you ever have any bullies who come forward asking for help or guidance or therapy?
I don't think I have it in the age group that I have. And I think as far as they have difficulty identifying themselves as a bully or really knowing that they are being a bully, and sometimes it's kind of like that learned behavior you were saying. And they're really just looking for something to empower them and reinforcement. And I think that's what Jen is saying is we don't target bullies. We're looking to embrace everybody and build a community that that teaches kids, you know, what is the right thing to do and how do we treat each other and do those things.
Well, if that's so, and let's say every bullying activity, it requires at least two people, a victim and the aggressor. How do you get the message to the aggressors or the bullies? How do they get involved? Is there any particular way that they would be brought in?
I think just our general recruitment, and sometimes we can work with the school staff and the counselors, and they might say, you know, so-and-so. And even the kids can identify that, oh, maybe this one student tends to be on the bullying side. So we might extend a special invitation to them to come to a Friday Night Live meeting, check us out, hang out, and really just kind of try to show that person some positivity and get them involved in a positive way.
We're getting towards the end of the program, and I'd like to ask you both. One of my favorite activities is to philosophize a little bit. I do that way too much. Ask my wife. She'll tell you. But if I had a magic wand, blank, you know, if I had a magic wand, if you had a magic wand and we're working on bullying, Jen and then Dan, what would you do or what would you like to see in our county?
Oh, geez. If I had a magic wand, I think I would want everybody to, whenever they did something, whether it was positive or negative or neutral to another person, I would wish that after they do that action, there was some way that they could feel exactly what that other person was feeling. And so whether it was something that they felt that was positive, then they're like, oh, wow, that was really great. I should do more of that. And if it was negative, maybe they don't realize how much, you know, how that's affecting the other person. And so to really feel that, and then they would be able to always want to make the other person feel good.
So time for reflection and maybe some self-contemplation. Dan, how about you?
I'd say maybe there was an endorphin in the brain that just let out good chemicals and made you feel really good every time that you did something positive. And then maybe you didn't have that feeling when you were being a bully. So just where focus more on the positive and that reinforcing of the things that you're doing right, you know, sort of. I guess that would be my idea.
One thing I know that supposedly a philosophically or psychologically advanced person lengthens the time between thought and action. For example, we all have thoughts, both good, bad, and indifferent, but a person who's struggling or needs help, a lot of times that distance between thought and action is microscopic or doesn't exist. I've told that criminals and prisoners are that way, that they go from emotion, let's say anger, to violence. They don't reflect. So maybe that's part of it. I'd like to thank our listening audience for being with us today. We've been discussing bullying and how we can reduce it in our county. My name is Brian Reynolds for Issues and Ideas. We have been joined by Dan Hartzell of the YMCA and Jen Rhodes from the Friday Night Live program. Thank you.
Thank you.